And we're wishing you a happy Friday on Morning Edition from NPR News. Our theme music was written by BJ Lederman. It was arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com. Support for Morning Edition on WILL comes from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Within the last hour, the United States Environmental Protection Agency released numbers for its renewable fuel standards, renewable volume obligations. And that's the top of the news for agriculture. It said increases across the renewable fuel spectrum, but that come up short of the original congressional mandates for 2014, and these rules are retroactive. EPA proposed levels that were actually produced and used as transportation and jet fuel or heating oil in the United States. For this year, 2015, EPA is proposing 16.3 billion gallons of total renewable fuels. And for 2016, for next year, that moves up to 17.4 billion gallons. EPA conceded in its announcement that the increases were ambitious, but that they do not meet the original volumes as set by Congress. The agency writes, due to constraints in the fuel market to accommodate increasing volumes of ethanol, along with limits on the availability of non-ethanol renewable fuels, the volume targets specified by Congress in the Clean Air Act for 14, 15, and 16 cannot be achieved. EPA said, though the volumes were low, they're lower than Congress asked for, they still are above historical levels and would ensure continued growth in the advanced biofuels market. Once the proposal is published in the Federal Register, by the way, it will be open for public comment. That until the 27th day of July of this year. A public hearing is also scheduled for June 25th in Kansas City, Kansas. Speaking of Kansas, our analyst for the day hails from Atchison. Mike Zuzlow, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, is now on the phone line to take up the marketplace. It's big news in the market this morning. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. What was your initial reaction today?
I thought the reaction for me was pretty much something for everybody, that the ethanol target was lowered, but the total renewable numbers were increased. And then on top of this news story, we saw the USDA come out and talk about $100 million in grants to fund pumps to distribute E15 and E85, and that's part of a plan, I think, goes back 5 or 6 years of trying to get 10,000 pumps out there in the United States to pump a higher level of ethanol. So the ethanol, I think you could get something for everybody in that, whereas the biodiesel mandate seemed a lot more friendly across the board, because 15, 16, and 17 biomass-based mandates were increased pretty substantially to, you know, 1.7 billion gallons for 2015 versus 1.28. Market reaction has been to buy the bean oil and sell the ethanol, it seems, because we're up about 3% in lead month bean oil right now, while the lead month ethanol is down about 1.2%. RINs are bid about 20% lower than yesterday's close.
Okay, so how long do you suppose it will take to build this all into the marketplace? Sometime, I suspect.
Yeah, I think it's going to take probably into next week before the trade really gets their arms around it, what it means for ethanol in particular. It doesn't look like to me, at first glance anyway, Todd, like I said, they took down the ethanol target to 13.4 billion gallons this year for 2015 versus 15.0 in the 2007 information. But they took the total renewables up to 15.93, and that was a pretty nice increase. So I would think the market would probably come around to, well, with cellulosic development probably still a small part of the equation, it's still going to be ethanol that, you know, pulls most of the weight.
Ethanol will pull most of the weight. There's the renewable fuels gap, which is the mandate of 15 million. So that's still it's still in play. It just has to be put into place with advanced biofuels of some sorts, I think.
Well, yeah, or the RINs get used up more, and so then you wonder how long the RINs will, you know, stay weaker here. So I think the RINs would, if I'm reading this report correct, after looking at it for about the last 40 minutes, I would think the RINs would probably be the first thing to find a bottom first.
That would seem likely, and we'll get more information. Hopefully I'll talk to Scott Irwin a bit later this morning, and we'll be able to have some information during the 12:30 newscast here on WILL AM 580, and then again this afternoon during the closing market report. So lots to discuss. I don't know that it's changed much today for farmers just yet. Just the idea that it's coming, and now we have to figure out how the implementation works and what it really means over time. Is that kind of the right sort of assumption?
Yeah, I'm going to try and figure out, and Dr. Irwin probably will know this already, but I'm going to try and figure out whether the EPA and USDA mandates or communications are work in conjunction with each other. In other words, do we send more E15 and E85 into gas tanks via this USDA grant program, and therefore we meet the mandate? So that's kind of the direction I'm heading.
Yeah, I think that probably may actually be the case. It'll take what? I talked to Dr. Irwin yesterday. Build out probably at least 18 months, mostly on those blender pumps, if you're really going to push them out. That would be the short time frame. So it'll take some time, but if you look forward, that's not a whole lot of time, and that could meet the advanced biofuels portion of the 15 billion gallons in total. So we'll see how that all works out. What do you see in the marketplace for the rest of the day today?
Well, wheat is the driver here at this point, Todd, and I say that because when I called Lance Honig at NASS on Thursday and asked him whether I had heard through a Reuters report that the crop conditions report from Tuesday, delayed after the holiday, did not factor in any of the potential damage from the heavy rains and the flooding of Oklahoma and Texas. And he confirmed, and I would suspect that the corn conditions did not either for those same states. He confirmed that it was as of pretty much Sunday morning, it sounds like to me. The 23rd was the date he gave, and it really probably didn't take into consideration anything that's happened. Well, we've had more rain since that report's been released, and so I would think that if the market were looking at a slightly weaker U.S. dollar because first quarter GDP was disappointing, it did actually turn negative. We had a Chicago PMI number, the third reading below 50 this year, which would say we may be in contraction here in the United States. And a couple other figures have come out would say dollar doesn't need to go up unless we hear more bad news out of Greece. I think the wheat's probably the most likely to find some short covering ahead of this crop condition report on Monday. If we don't get short covering in wheat, it's probably going to be tough for the corn to find it. And meanwhile, beans are probably trading their own fundamentals with this biodiesel mandate and also with this ongoing issue with Argentine meal crushers not getting much product out of their country.
And so we'll be watching Monday afternoon. I suspect from what you told me that the crop condition ratings for wheat will move more simply because the rainfall is in a larger area for the hard red winter wheat than maybe the corn condition ratings would move. Is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, state specifically, Oklahoma did lose 3% and good to excellent this week on the Tuesday report, but I think I could expect to see, you know, that at least double on Monday's report based upon some of just the locales and where the majority of the county by county hard red wheat production is made in the states of Oklahoma and in Texas as well. And, you know, even in the corn conditions, you bring that up. I talked to an Indiana client near Crawfordsville this week, and he said, what was the Indiana corn condition? And I said, well, it was 75% good to excellent, and then that compares to 70% a year ago. And he said, I don't know about eastern Indiana, but I'm not even close to where I was as far as good a crop and crop stands in corn. And so that made me initiate a phone call over towards Hartford City, Muncie area in Indiana, and they said the exact same thing. So interesting to see what these numbers will present us.
Hey, thanks for being with me this morning. We'll talk with you again this afternoon. And thanks for doing Commodity Week yesterday. Of course, that's already up on our website, and people can take a listen there and hear all about the dollar.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great day.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Joins us here on Illinois Public Media. This is WILL AM 580, WILL FM 90.9, HD3 Urbana. We're coming up on the top of the hour. It's 10 o'clock in the central time zone. Here the way the numbers are trading in Chicago. Corn futures are down a penny in the nearby July at 352 and a quarter, December 368 and three quarters, a penny and a quarter lower for the morning. And next year's July at 391 and three quarters, down a penny and three quarters. July beans are off, or rather up, six and a quarter at 932. November at 905, up three. January at 912 and a half, three and a half higher. Bean meal $2 lower. Bean oil up $1.03. Live cattle futures down 30. Feeders are down 45. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.